nothing is more infectious than momentum. And whether that's working at a company or a sports team, we just had the Super Bowl yesterday, or it's the city that you live in. And I think the Midwest, the Unvalley, Indianapolis has incredible momentum.
Imagine 2 years, 3 years after we moved to the cloud from on-prem, somebody started an on-prem company. You'd be like, what are you doing? And so the same thing right now is going on, that if you're building a software company and you don't have some kind of integration with AI in your architecture, you know, you got to look at somebody and say, what are you doing?
Be the person who, you know, when your car breaks down, is like out there pushing your car, you know, trying to get it to move. Because you know who gets out and stops and helps the person who has their car broken down? It's the people that see that you're out there actually trying to like fix the problem and make progress.
Builders identify other builders by just seeing what they're doing, and they all gravitate towards each other. That's been like one of the best parts of Middle Tech, honestly, is getting to become part of this community of people that are just doing cool things.
And so that was the big vision for Powder Keg, is how do we kind of like build this Iron Man suit for all these heroic founders in what we call the Unvalley, or the area beyond Silicon Valley, where I think there are just outsized opportunities for markets like Lexington, Kentucky in general, and of course, all throughout Middle America.
All right, welcome back to the Middle Tech Podcast. You've got Logan Jones here with Evan Knowles, and today we are joined by Matt Hunkler of Powder Keg. So we're excited to jump into that conversation. He's coming to us from Indianapolis, Indiana. And before we talk to Matt, we just want to get a quick word from our sponsors. Before highlighting our sponsors, we'd just like to state that the views and content shared on this platform do not necessarily reflect those of our show sponsors. Middle Tech is presented by KY Innovation, the Kentucky Cabinet for Economic Development's Office of Entrepreneurship. KY Innovation exists to support and develop Kentucky's startup ecosystem, and we are proud to be supported by an organization whose mission aligns so closely with ours. If you're a founder building in Kentucky, you need to check out the resources that KY Innovation has to offer. You can find more information by clicking the link in our show notes or going to kyinnovation.com.
Middle Tech is sponsored by Bolt Marketing. Take your website to the next level with a website that's built to work. At Bolt Marketing, they're revolutionizing websites for small businesses that are affordable, customizable, and hassle-free. Whether you have a construction company, a boutique clothing store, or you own a hot yoga studio, they have options for you. Click the link in our show notes to explore their marketing options that can transform your marketing and grow your business. And as a personal note, Bolt Marketing built our website, and they were awesome to work with throughout the entire process. We highly recommend working with them.
All right, Matt, I was excited to get you on the pod. We have overlapping missions between Middle Tech and Powder Keg, and we've been fans of yours for a while and have really admired what you're doing up in Indianapolis. So excited to dive into, you know, your work there, but we really want to share with our audience, you know, the evolution of the Indianapolis ecosystem and your work within it. You have a front row seat to a lot of what's going on. And I think there's a lot of great learnings that, you know, founders and ecosystem supporters here in Kentucky can take from, you know, Powder Keg's journey and also the founders that you've been covering for so long. So Matt, excited to have you on, man.
Thanks for having me, Evan, and Logan as well. I was saying before we hit record, longtime fan, first time caller. Obviously, super aligned mission wise, and I'm a middle child from the Midwest, so Middle Tech is totally my jam. I'm eager to dive in.
That's funny. Well, let's give the audience, you know, some background on you and Powder Keg. So give us, you know, the journey of founding Powder Keg and kind of the evolution of it to today.
Sure. So Powder Keg today is a private member network for entrepreneurs and leaders who are growing and scaling in the tech industry beyond Silicon Valley. And the way we got there is pretty interesting. Just like most founder stories, it is not a direct line from point A to point B. There's lots of stops along the way and lots of exploration around the country and across industries. But I was born here in the Midwest. I grew up in West Lafayette, where Purdue University is. So I kind of won the lottery that way because I got to go to a public school, but, you know, was with all the sons and daughters of Purdue professors, and grew up in a pretty engineering forward community, as you might expect. And then my family, too, is just generations of entrepreneurs. So my great grandfather had a bunch of service stations around the Midwest. My grandfather had a another business in the automotive parts kind of space. And so I kind of was born into it a little bit. And, you know, started my first companies, you know, outside of lemonade stands, you know, kind of found my first real company when I was in high school, which kind of gave me a little bit of a taste of entrepreneurship. But it wasn't until I transferred from Purdue to IU after my freshman year, just to get out of the hometown and plug into the business school at the Kelly School of Business down at IU. I lost all my scholarships, so I had to get creative. And so what did I turn to? Well, what I knew, which was entrepreneurship. So I started a tech company, kind of early days of outsourcing, contracting overseas. This was like 2007. And so kind of assembled a group of contractors through trial and error, working on different projects, you know, some custom software development, websites, some internet marketing here and there. We even did some like book design and typesetting, all kinds of interesting projects that exposed me to in college. And it was kind of through that process, I really fell in love with software and kind of the sort of ecosystem that was building there in Bloomington, Indiana. And so, of course, when I joined an entrepreneurial fellowship here in Indianapolis and moved here after graduation, I was kind of like, all right, where are my people spending nights and weekends building things? And couldn't really find it. And so what do? You kind of put out the bat signal and are like, hey, where are my people doing this? And, you know, that was like 12 of us, you know, 15 years ago in the back room of a bar. And what started in that back room of a bar over the next 15 years kind of grew organically and with a little bit of marketing. You know, Twitter was early days then. YouTube was early days. I had a flip camera and I was recording the pitches and fireside chats from kind of the luminary entrepreneurs here in Indianapolis. And it just caught on like wildfire. I mean, it kind of spread across the Midwest into places like Cincinnati. And that's probably the closest we got to Kentucky back then was Newport was just across the river of some of our events that we were doing. And but we also got all the way out to Kansas City and all the way over to Raleigh, Durham and Denver and Nashville. All the while, this is kind of a side project for me. And I'm working at high growth venture backed companies, getting to learn kind of the ropes of growing some venture scale companies and getting to benefit from just the boom that was happening here in Indianapolis, facilitating a lot of the connections. But it was really about 5 years ago that we were like, okay, there's a big opportunity here. My travels kind of had taken me all over the country. I went on 8 of the 9 tours with the Rise of the Rest and Steve Case, the co-founder of AOL, who has written a bunch of checks into a bunch of really, really interesting companies in the, you know, the rest of the country outside of Silicon Valley, beyond Silicon Valley. And so it was kind of in doing a lot of that work before launching Powder Keg that I really saw the big opportunity, which is a lot of these entrepreneurs have just amazing. I mean, Evan, you're a great example of this, just amazing idea, so much insider knowledge and the like know-how to like assemble a team. But then, you know, in order to get the capital to grow and scale, you know, had to go outside the local geography. And so that was the big vision for Powder Keg is how do we kind of like build this Iron Man suit for all these heroic founders in what we call the Unvalley or the area beyond Silicon Valley, where I think there are just outsized opportunities for markets like Lexington, Kentucky in general, and of course, all throughout Middle America.
I love that. And that's, like Evan said at the very beginning before we started recording, it's very similar missions to what Middle Tech's trying to do as well. With Middle Tech, we've definitely taken like the media approach to it. It sounds like you guys are really focused on helping entrepreneurs connect to the resources themselves. So just kind of talk about like, you know, when you first started off, was it primarily focused on capital and connecting other founders? And what is it like, what is the full suite of Powder Keg service look like now compared to where you guys started?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story because I will say Powder Keg is the first business I started that wasn't initially meant to be a business. I literally tried to hand this thing off like 5 times because I was like, you know what? I sold my company. I started in college. I'm working at a startup. I'm part of this entrepreneurial fellowship where I have like a leadership role and I'm starting this, you know, non-toxic personal care products and cosmetics marketplace. You know, this is like the early days of, it's actually a little too early for non-toxic personal care products and cosmetics. So it was very self-serving. I had an e-commerce business that I co-founded with someone who was a trend spotter at P&G. Actually, I met him in Cincinnati. Sorry, he wasn't at P&G, but he did. He was at an agency that did work with, you know, companies like P&G, Wrigley, you know, a lot of CPG stores. And so he saw the trend of, you know, organic and natural products early on. This was 2008 when we were working on this thing. And, you know, we were about 7 years too early or underfunded, depending on how you look at it. And so I was struggling. I was like, all right, I don't know how to use the tools I used to know how to use, which is like SEO, digital marketing. No one was searching for those terms back then. We were really kind of having to almost like create the market, and was struggling. And so early days, it was literally just, I want to get some smart people in a room and be like, what am I doing wrong? What else should I try? And because we got the group together, two other guys were like, hey, can I present what I'm doing too? And just ask for some feedback and advice. And in a lot of ways, what we did 15 years ago in the back room of Binkley's, a bar here on Kessler Avenue in Indianapolis, is very similar to what we're doing today. Our model is very much like, if you're familiar with like EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, YPO, Vistage, it's very much that, but kind of like for the 21st century and for technology-driven businesses, just because these innovation-driven businesses move at a different scale, as you guys talk about all the time on the podcast here. And there's just unique challenges to these different business models. So at the core of what we do, we have these core groups of either CEOs or executives that meet on a regular basis. They're moderated and facilitated by people who have actually done the work before. So experienced executives, experienced CEOs. A couple of our CEO groups, it's kind of fun. One of our facilitators is a success story of the powder keg ecosystem because he was a lawyer. He had his own private practice in the very, very early days of powder keg. It was called Verge at the time. This is going back over a decade now. He was actually the one who was like, hey, dummy, you should probably like file some articles of incorporation so that you're not personally liable, you know, for what happens at a, you know, business function where everyone's drinking beer and like is, you know, either walking home or getting a ride home. Like, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good point. And so he was literally just a practicing lawyer. I don't mean just a practicing lawyer, but like what he went on to do is he founded PackSafe, which was a legal tech company that ended up raising almost 10 million bucks, scaled to doing millions in ARR, got acquired by Ironclad, one of the big darling unicorn tech companies out of the Bay Area, you know, sat on the board there for a long time, helped strategically kind of guide that company, which is doing some pretty exciting stuff right now. And so now he's kind of semi-retired and is working with our CEOs facilitating these groups where everyone gets to learn from each other, you know, sharing from experience, getting to help kind of like make those connections in real time in these smaller groups, but then connecting to the broader global community of founders and leaders across the country.
Yeah. Well, with so much experience there with, you know, those groups that you've created, which sounds like an awesome opportunity for founders to be a part of and just a general ecosystem to participate in, you know, what are you seeing there in Indianapolis that, you know, might be misconceptions people have about founders, you know, in the Midwest or just middle America compared to the coast? What's your learning there?
Well, I think you talk about it. You talk about it on a lot of your episodes here, but similar trends in Indianapolis. I think in a lot of ways, Indianapolis has some really big benefits that we had some early successes going way back before I even got to town. There was a software company called Software Artistry that I think was acquired by IBM and put some capital back in the market. Baker Hill, Karen Baker, Mark Hill, married couple who actually were kind of like my executive sponsor in this entrepreneurial fellowship that I was in right out of college, sold Baker Hill to Experian, big fintech software platform. And so there are a couple hundred plus million dollar exits. And then just a few years later, and in 2013, ExactTarget is acquired by Salesforce for over $2 billion. You've got Interactive Intelligence that was acquired by Genesys for over $1 billion, just either a couple years before or after that. Aprimo sold a few years before that for $500 million. Lots of marketing technology, just because of the sheer nature of ExactTarget. But I think one of the misconceptions about Indianapolis today, because of that history, is that Indianapolis is only marketing tech and only enterprise B2B SaaS. Certainly similarities there. When you look at any Midwest tech company, you know, it is going to be predominantly business to business. There's not a lot of consumer app stuff out there. There have been some huge successes. So like out of Indianapolis, Formspring was something that kind of came out of the Indianapolis ecosystem. At the time, it was the fastest growing website in the history of the internet. It grew so fast that they moved out to the Bay Area and went and scaled it out there. And as things sometimes happen in the Bay Area, raised a lot of capital, cap table changes. I don't know what all is public and what's not public, but Formspring didn't have, you know, the end destination. They didn't quite hit what they wanted to hit there. But the business to business, the original business, Formstack, they rebranded to Formstack, had an amazing exit here just a couple of years ago. And that stayed in Indianapolis because of the business to business roots, the good kind of angel investor ecosystem. I know it's something you've talked about, Evan, your own experience raising capital in Kentucky. I think we have maybe a little bit more angel activity here in Indianapolis. Certainly lots of people because of the ExactTarget exit. There was just a lot of capital thrown off and people who made money in software, so more likely to invest in software. Similarly with Aprimo and Interactive Intelligence and some of those others. But then we're kind of getting that second wave now too. So another great example success story is Max Yoder, who's also a good friend of mine now. We kind of came up together in the Aura Fellowship, entrepreneurial fellowship. I actually recruited him into the fellowship, and he started his first company in the powder keg community, pitched it on stage. It was a very interesting, like, online polling software, ultimately failed. But I think that that's a really key thing that I think the powder keg community being a part of the fabric of the tech community here in the early, you know, 2009, 10, 11, it just created that culture of like failing is okay. You know, like that business, Quipple was the name of the business, failed because Max said, this is done. You know, like he could have kept it open. It didn't fail because there wasn't a viable business there. It just didn't have the trajectory and it wasn't the passion that he wanted to go and pursue. And so I think really smartly, he was like, this isn't my passion. It's time to shut it down. I don't want to just be like a BuzzFeed, you know, quiz poll thing in all of these articles. I really wanted like kind of a more engaging type of thing that I guess there's not the market that I wanted it to be. I'm just going to, you know, see what's next. And then he founds Lessonly, which had a really nice exit here a couple of years ago, grew to over 100 employees, raised some great capital, had incredible return for investors. I think that's been publicly shared, at least on social media, hundreds of millions of dollars back into the ecosystem, you know, full employee stock option plan. So lots of life-changing money happened throughout that company. And so you're starting to kind of see the trickle-down effects now of like, okay, it's okay to fail, get up on stage again, let's pitch your startup again, let's, you know, go raise capital. How does the community support you because you're in the arena, you know, doing things, trying things? And just keep going, keep trying things until something works and you can scale it.
Yeah. Evan, why don't you talk a little bit about your experience with Simba? Because I think it's very similar to what Matt's talking about here. And I think that's relevant, one, because of your experience raising from angels and what Matt was talking about, the trickle down effects of having capital flow back into the ecosystem and things like angel networks being a little bit more abundant. But I feel like you would have some good insight to add to what he was just saying there.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that stood out to me the most, which was back to the original question, which is like, what are some misconceptions, you know, people have here in middle America about founders or just the process of building a business? And I think that the one that came up and stood out with what Matt just said was, you know, the perception of failure. You know, I think as an ecosystem in middle America and just kind of the lifestyles people live in middle America, you know, we're more averse to risk than those on the coast, you know, in San Francisco especially, but also other coastal towns. And so, you know, yeah, one of the big learnings coming out of Simba was, yeah, that didn't end how we wanted. And it definitely opened our eyes to how supportive I think the ecosystem is and can continue to improve when it comes to failure. I think that, you know, when I reached out and said, hey, to my investors and those that, you know, were involved in the businesses, this isn't turning out, you know, the way we want. We're going to end up having an exit here to return capital back to investors. You know, I think everybody was, you know, very encouraging and said, hey, you know, despite this not being what you wanted, this is an outcome that's rare. And we're looking forward to you turning around and doing this again. And we hope to support you. And so, you know, I just hope to see more of that, because again, I think people in middle America are way more averse to risk. So that's one thing that stood out. And that also ties into angel investing. You know, the more risk tolerant the ecosystem is, then those exits that end up happening, those founders are going to turn right around and do risky, you know, business with that money, which is turning it and giving it to founders again. Because, you know, the failure rate's so high that, you know, you have to have a tolerance for risk to go through all of that risk, have a success, and then turn right around and give that money to another founder that's taking on the same risk. And so, you know, that's kind of the trend there that I caught in what Matt said, was just, I think the failure and risk tolerance in middle America can continue to improve, but I'm seeing promising signs because of exits. You know, the more exits there are, the more people say, oh, these risks that I'm perceiving or want to do myself are worth it. I see other people having success. And so that's what stood out to me the most. I don't know about you, Logan.
Yeah, I think that alongside, we talk about a lot here in Lexington, Matt, just like, what is it going to take for Lexington to get to like in Indianapolis? Because you guys are definitely further along in terms of startup ecosystems because you've had those exits. And that's what we really want to see continue to happen, is our ecosystem building up companies to hopefully get that exit and bring capital into the ecosystem. But an interesting antidote before this next question that I like to tell about this ecosystem is it doesn't even necessarily take an exit for more startup activity to be generated within an ecosystem. So a good example is Fuji, which the company I just joined, Evan was the first employee there. Fuji spun out, I believe it was the CTO at the startup that I just left, Sales River. It led Evan to going and starting Middle Tech. It led Evan to going and starting Simba. It led Michael Lewis, who is on the finance team, to going and starting his own company. So it's like, that wasn't even an exit, but it taught a lot of young people what it looks like to build a high growth company. And they got bit by the entrepreneur bug. So it's like, that's a narrative I like talking about too, is it doesn't necessarily have to be capital flung back into the ecosystem for that to happen.
I have a great Indianapolis analog for that I am actually a byproduct of, because my original plan in college was to take the business I had started and go out to the Bay Area, you know, where I thought tech had to happen to like really be successful. And the reason I stayed was this entrepreneurial fellowship. And the company that caught my attention was a company called Cha-Cha. Do either of you remember the company Cha-Cha?
Like Ask No. Cha-Cha? Was that like an Ask Cha-Cha
Yes.
kind of thing? Or am I thinking
Yes.
of something else?
So it was early days. The original product before they made some pivots was, you know, text 242-242 before, you know, phones had a full keyboard. 242 is Cha-Cha in whatever that is, T9, right? Yeah. And you could have a text conversation with a bunch of agents who are experts on different things. This was actually early days AI. So they were using AI to answer some of the questions and create drafts that then were approved by humans. And then, of course, iPhone comes along, changes the entire game. Cha-Cha was founded by Scott Jones, the inventor of voicemail, who moved from Boston back to central Indiana after he had his exit with, well, not only voicemail, but Gracenote, which sold to Sony and now powers all of iTunes, like cataloging system. So serial entrepreneur, I'm like, I got to work with this guy. You know, so I'm going to sell my company and take a pay cut so I can go work for this guy at Cha-Cha. Cha-Cha raises hundreds of millions of dollars. Jeff Bezos is invested. Lots of people are invested. You know, big name investors, you can look it up. You know, it was a top 50 website on the internet in terms of traffic. But I got a job there through the fellowship, sold my company while I'm still in college, finishing up my senior year of at IU. And I see on TechCrunch, Cha-Cha lays off entire executive team, because of course I set up a Google alert because I'm like, oh, I got to stay in touch with what Cha-Cha is doing. Lays off entire executive team. Literally 20 minutes after I read this article, I get a call from my like point person at this entrepreneurial fellowship, hey man, I have bad news. I'm like, did I lose my job? And they're like, yep, you just lost your job. But good news is it's a fellowship network. You know, there's someone else that wants an Order Fellow. Maybe you talk to him and you can get a job. Long story short, I ended up not working at Cha-Cha. I did end up working at Cha-Cha, but it was 5 years later in 2013 when they had a social influencer platform that was really successful, early days social influencer platform that I was going to come in and spin off. Well, Cha-Cha, over the course of its, you know, decade plus here in Indianapolis, recruited in just some all-star talent. I mean, just some really, really good executives. Sean Schwegman, CMO, former CMO of Overstock.com, was an executive that came into town for Cha-Cha and has stayed here and since started Demand Jump and several other companies here in town after being at Cha-Cha. Amin Brar is someone who's started a fund now here in Indianapolis because after Cha-Cha, he went and worked at a company that ended up selling to Virtusa. Then he went and started a company that sold to Jobvite. Then he was the CEO of Jobvite, moved the headquarters from the Bay Area to Indianapolis. Jobvite, big HR tech company that moves its headquarters to Indianapolis, all because originally Amin was recruited in to be an executive at Cha-Cha. And after he was let, I don't know if he was laid off or not, but a lot of people ended up getting laid off at Cha-Cha over the years. It was kind of like a raise around the capital, hire a bunch of people. Layoffs to raise the round of capital. Sometimes tech companies did this, especially in the early 2000s. Anyway, long story short, that's our like Indianapolis analog, and it's totally worked. I mean, Cha-Cha didn't have a big fancy exit. It just struggled to kind of find that final product market fit and the right buyer. If they raised a ton of money, probably too much money to have a good exit. But the benefit is Indianapolis as a whole just raised the talent level as an ecosystem. And yeah, you wouldn't call Cha-Cha a success necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. And it also kind of makes it easier to swallow the possibility of failure when you understand that even if you do have like quote unquote failure from not achieving the exit that you want, like you still get all of these great benefits from an ecosystem and a community perspective. And that's kind of the next thing that I wanted to hit on with you just because of your Powder Keg's position within the Indianapolis ecosystem. You all seem to have a really engaged and helpful community around you in Indianapolis. So like another example of this is our friend Jake Butler, who's been on the podcast with Endeavor. You know, there's just these great organizations, yes, but it's the people at the organizations that seem to really like push things along. So just kind of hit on your experience being part of that ecosystem from the relationships and community side of it, because it seems like you guys have really nailed that in your ecosystem.
Yeah, it's I really think it's just a culture thing. I think it's a Midwest thing because I see this. Yeah. I see this in, you know, Cincinnati and even Chicago, Columbus, a lot of the other Midwest networks. I'm talking to more folks up in like Fargo and Grand Forks, all the way up in the northern Midwest and Minneapolis, Twin Cities up there. I think this is something that's uniquely kind of Midwest values, where it's like, hey, people are people, and you're in my community. If you have a question and it's a thoughtful question and you're in the arena working on something, like I'm happy to grab coffee. I'm happy to grab lunch. And I think that is one of the magical things about being in a market that, if you're in the Bay Area, you know, if you're in San Francisco, if you're in New York, you're probably not going to like find a way to like grab breakfast with the mayor. But like, if you're in Indianapolis and you're working on something in like GovTech or something that's related to like making a difference in the city, like you could probably in a matter of a few conversations find your way to having that conversation with the mayor of Indianapolis or Lexington or Louisville or, you know, wherever that that market is. And I think that's really, really beneficial. And you're starting to see a lot more big companies doing business with startups as well. That's a change that I've definitely seen. You know, some of our bigger companies in Indiana are companies like Cummins, Lilly, with, you know, bigger and bigger innovation arms. They're working with startups, you know, they're engaged in the ecosystem. I think in a lot of ways we were trying to learn from Cincinnati on that, just with the focus of Centrifuge and what they did down there in Cincy. They got big co's involved from the very beginning. Ours has been a little bit more from grassroots, founder-led. Let's, you know, get some pizzas and a keg of beer. We've since upgraded, you know, some of our experiential stuff. But in the early days, it was just like, hey, you know, what brewery is going to donate the beer? And you know, who owns some pizzerias that can like donate some pizzas, and who's got enough space to house, you know, 700 people to talk about tech startups for a while. So I think it's one of those things. The best analogy I can think of, Sam Parr said this. Sam Parr is a founder of The Hustle. He's now actually working on a platform called Hampton for Founders. It's actually very similar to Powderkeg in a lot of ways. It's just not focused on tech, and it's not facilitated by other entrepreneurs. But one of the things he said on our podcast was, be the person who, you know, when your car breaks down, is like out there pushing your car, you know, trying to get it to move. Because you know who gets out and stops and helps the person who has their car broken down? It's the people that see that you're out there actually trying to like fix the problem and make progress. So push the car. Don't sit there with your thumb out, you know, waiting for someone to come and save you. Like actually like roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty. And that's how you get people in communities like Indianapolis or wherever you are to like be like, hey, how can I help? I see you're working really hard here. Would you like a wrench? You know, like that kind of mentality.
I love that. Builders identify other builders by just seeing what they're doing, and they all gravitate towards each other. That's been like one of the best parts of Middle Tech, honestly, is getting to become part of this community of people that are just doing cool things. You know, the people like that love hanging around each other. And one of the things I want to hit on real quick before I kick it over to Evan for another question is something that I think is hugely important for Midwest startups, just because we don't have access to the same amount of resources that like coastal startups would have. You talked about big companies working with startups as a way to like really be able to support what's going on in the innovation ecosystem. And I had direct experience with that at the last company I was with. We got Humana. Humana was an inbound customer of ours during COVID. Like COVID shook some stuff up, and they had budgets in places they didn't normally have, and they were looking for ways to spend it. And long story short, they ended up working with us. And that literally got the business to the point where we did not have to raise a seed round of capital, because Humana came to us with a couple million of revenue, and we're like, awesome. Like, we'll figure out how to make this work for you. And to this day, that company still gets to work with them. And it got the company to the point of being able to hire on additional people without having to dilute the equity of the founders and the existing employees, which was awesome. Like, that can have such a huge impact on a small company. So anybody that listens that, you know, is part of procurement for a big company, like, definitely consider the startups every once in a while, because it can have a huge impact. But Evan, I'll kick it over to you for the next question.
Yeah, just kind of switch gears. Let's talk trends that you're seeing up in the ecosystem, and maybe compare them to what we're seeing down here. What are you seeing up there as far as adoption of AI? Are people really starting to begin building companies using AI? Are they incorporating them into startups that, you know, had already existed? What's the conversation up there around AI? Because that's, you know, obviously the hottest thing across the whole world right now. So what Indianapolis specific examples do you have?
I think every tech company is using AI in some way right now. And that's, I think, one of the beautiful things about this movement over the last, that at least that I've witnessed over the last 15 years is, you know, we think of the Unvalley as the area beyond Silicon Valley, but we also think of it as this movement, this trend of unbundling Silicon Valley and recognizing that, you know, we saw the advent of the cloud, and you don't have to have your servers in your actual back room. You can be on EC2 or Azure, or whatever else you're building your software on. AI is like that same concept, but exponential. And so in the industries that I think are still ripe for disruption, things like healthcare, you're seeing companies like Authentix doing some really interesting things. Amy Brown is the founder of Authentix. The co-founder of PackSafe is now their head of product. Eric is just a super talented guy who was at Exact Target. So you're getting these veterans from the tech industry who are now like working with AI and really, really scaling things. There's all kinds of interesting applications, of course, on the marketing tech side of things. You're seeing a lot of companies leveraging AI and doing it in really unique ways. But then you're also getting the people who are kind of like selling the pickaxes and the shovels to the builders. So a great example of this is Engineered Innovation Group. They spun off. So the guy who built Journey Builder at Exact Target, which was kind of like a big piece of the marketing cloud and why they got acquired by Salesforce, Jake Miller, he ended up co-founding a company called Meta, Meta CX. It was actually called Meta before Meta. Facebook was Meta. And then they've rebranded to Meta Impact. But anyway, he co-founded that with Scott McCorkle, who was one of the early leaders at Exact Target. Took those learnings and what they built with AI there to say, you know what, I want to actually build a dev shop that's going to really focus on helping companies, whether they're startups or they're big enterprises and Fortune 100 companies, build their products with AI from the start. And they're doing some pretty remarkable things. So one of the demos that we saw last week in one of our CEO circles, Jake's in one of our CEO circles. So we got a sneak peek at the way that they're using AI to create these avatars. So one of the big innovations in AI, at least Jake's hypothesis, is people aren't going to interact with it the same way we're doing right now with ChatGPT, where it's all prompts and it's kind of like Googling. People are still kind of like using ChatGPT and Bard like Google, at least the people aren't power users yet. That's not really how AI works or thinks. It's like the best analog. And so we're in this like weird, awkward middle stage where we're still getting to this like new way that AI will be used. And so Jake was demoing for us, like this responsive AI person, like literally could be our fourth guest on this show, and was like their facial responses that they were making were reacting to like the way that, you know, you interact with the screen. It's kind of creepy in a lot of ways. It's like a little bit like borderline creepy, but like as a technology lover and someone who cares about humanity, it's like, okay, this is actually making technology more human, more relatable, more useful. And just using voice commands, you know, this AI was using live information to respond, answer questions, riff back and forth. And so Jake's work on some interesting things there that are going to be kind of like, you know, your virtual team workers that can hop on a call and, you know, be like, hey, I have this problem, you know, with the product platform, or I have this problem with a marketing go-to-market strategy. And you actually have like these super intelligent team members that you can just kind of pull onto a project and collaborate with. And, you know, maybe a future guest of the Middle Tech Pod will be an AI agent, you know, representing and as the median Midwest tech entrepreneur. Who knows?
Yeah, that's awesome. As somebody building with AI right now, it's fascinating and moving very quick. And I liked the analogy you gave, and I gave it actually in our last episode of, you know, why everybody's building with AI right now, and it's very similar to, you know, the move from on-prem software to cloud. And on the last episode, I said, well, imagine 2 years, 3 years after we moved to the cloud from on-prem, somebody started an on-prem company. You'd be like, what are you doing? And so the same thing right now is going on, that if you're building a software company and you don't have some kind of integration with AI in your architecture, you know, you got to look at somebody and say, what are you doing? And I think we're in that same stage, and it's going to be exciting to see how that develops. And what's really, I think, impressive about this movement in particular is, you know, you oftentimes see this happen on the coasts and then slowly work their way from maybe San Francisco to the rest of the country. And this just overnight expanded across the entire country to everybody and became the fastest growing, you know, technology of all time with ChatGPT and the adoption that it got. So it's pretty apparent that this is a trend that no matter where you are in the country, you need to be jumping on. So excited.
The trends are coming faster and faster and more frequently. And, you know, I know we're both in landlocked cities, but I think we all have a common background that we like to vacation Costa Rica and surf. and I really like to think of this as a surfing metaphor, in that one of the things I've seen consistently is one of the benefits of building a community of tens of thousands of entrepreneurs is you get to witness what the best entrepreneurs are really good at. And it's the entrepreneurs who are, you know, willing to paddle out, learn how to like ride the waves, are patient enough to wait for the right wave and aren't just like, you know, hopping on the first thing that's like a shiny object. And then when the wave's coming, they paddle hard, right? Because like in surfing, you got to get up to speed of the wave. Otherwise, you're not catching it, right? And so I experienced this myself, right? Like I tried to catch the wave too early on non-toxic personal care products and cosmetics with that startup called Repurify. I almost did that with Powder Keg by starting what I started 5 years ago, 10 years ago, before, you know, the wave really started to crest in these like tech hubs, really exploding with opportunity. And so these last 5 years, I've just been like paddling at speed to try to catch up with the wave that is the unbundling of Silicon Valley. But then, you know, you've got all these other waves that are coming too that you can kind of ride and surf. And I think that that's kind of like the secret sauce. And there's a human element to that too, right? Because you can't just like try to catch every wave. You really have to be discerning about your energy and where you're focusing that. So Evan, I'm really excited for you because you not only are at the crossroads of, you know, this big shift in AI, but you have the time and space to really be thoughtful about it and to really go after it when you see that right wave. So I'll be interested to see what you build.
Yeah, I was talking to an investor the other day and they made a comment to me that, you know, I didn't think about just because, you know, you're kind of stuck in your own head and what you do day in and day out. But I had approached him for Simba and he was a big fan of Simba when I was raising our round for that business. And I reapproached him and wanted some feedback on what I'm doing now. And he said, Evan, you know, it was probably a big blessing in disguise that, you know, Simba ended when it did. It ended, you know, a year and a half after LLMs and all this generative AI and this AI movement, you know, kicked off. You've been able to watch and try to build a business with AI and incorporate it into your business. You saw the pain points and now you're able to execute. And like you said, you are able to take the time and be thoughtful about building a business. And that could have been a big blessing in disguise. So it is kind of interesting how things turn out. And I hope to, you know, like you said, catch that wave. And I'm excited about what we're doing. But yeah, Logan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, and just to add on to that, Matt, I'm not sure if you're aware of this. Evan and I are actually roommates as well. We invested in a condo together that we're turning into an Airbnb and we've been living together. Yeah, it's been a lot of fun.
There you go.
It's been
fun. You're just on like hacker founder house.
No, that's exactly what it feels like. And getting to like listen to, you know, we talk all the time about what Evan's building with Devise. It's just like, it's cool because Evan made this comment on one of our first episodes of the season. It's like the best way to learn something is by just like jumping in and building it. And I would argue that the second best way to learn something is by living with somebody who's doing that. Cause I get to hear all the thoughts that Evan's having and we have all these conversations about it. And it is just like, it's on the cutting edge of it right now. If you're trying to build a product in it, and it's right now, what I see is just like, how are you structuring the data to be able to integrate AI into a new solution that's not possible currently. But anyway, transitioning for a second back to Powder Keg, we always love hearing about kind of the yin and the yang of the business. So let's talk just real briefly about some of the challenges or failures that you've experienced with Powder Keg. And then on the other side of that, any successes that you want to call out, things that you're very proud of. So we don't have to spend too much time on either one of those, but just like kind of the few things off the top of your head on either one.
Well, I think that the challenge is going to be not spending too much time on it because any business that's been around for 10, 15 years has a lot of things that it's screwed up along the way. I think one of the things I was completely oblivious to early on with Powder Keg was just any kind of like notion of creating an inclusive space. You know, I was a white dude with a bunch of white dude friends that all like to build technology on the internet and build companies. And so that's who I invited to the events early on. And so I had just graduated college. So a lot of the events looked kind of like frat parties because we were getting keg beer donated and getting solo cups and pizza. And, you know, surprise, surprise, that's not a very inviting place for women entrepreneurs to like come and be a part of the ecosystem. Or at least that was some kind feedback that I got early on when I just didn't know any better. That was probably some of my earliest mistakes was just like, I was kind of like, oh, I'm telling everyone where the event is. Of course I'm being inclusive. Anyone's welcome. But like really learning that building a community is about being intentional about reaching out to people that aren't already finding you and saying, hey, how do I make this more approachable for you? Is there anything that's causing friction for you getting plugged in and getting the resources you need to grow and scale? The other big lesson I learned with PowderKeg, if I'm thinking about it as a business and not just a community, because for a long time I was treating PowderKeg as a side project. This is not my like real thing. This is just a side community that just happened to grow to thousands of people. And, you know, I'm working on these other, you know, quote unquote, real companies, is learn what you're good at. And PowderKeg happened organically because I think I just have a knack for community building and connecting people and creating those experiences, whether they're online with software or they're in person with in-person events. And I kind of shied away from it for a long time. I went full-time for a year, but then I went and did this, you know, spin-off startup with Scott Jones. Then I burnt out because I was working 80 hours a week at a venture-funded company and hired someone in to run, you know, PowderKeg Verge at the time. And so then I had to take a couple of years to just like run it as a lifestyle business because I was so burnt out. But if I had really like known myself better and been connected with my own talents, I could have focused on doing what I do really well sooner. And the sooner you can do that and really find like your sweet spot and just like keep doing the thing you're really good at and keep hiring amazing people like Meg, who's been on our team for over 5 years, is basically a co-founder of PowderKeg and is like our integrator and can like balance out all my crazy ideas with like structure. That was, you know, a hard lesson to learn, you know, and had the benefits of meandering in the desert for a long time and getting to see a lot of the world and the country and, you know, meet thousands of entrepreneurs. But if you I'm thinking about business success, I think PowderKeg could have gotten a lot bigger, a lot faster if I had just said, this is what I'm really good at. And then the other big lesson being trying to help everyone helps no one. And early on, PowderKeg was like the only thing going in terms of like tech ecosystem. And so like for the first 5 years I was in town, I was just trying to do everything. You know, people were like, hey, come start the first co-working space. And fortunately, I didn't do that. But like there was just a bajillion opportunities. Everyone wanted to do it with Verge at the time. And I took a lot of those opportunities and just tried to help everybody, you know, take their organization in the 21st century and kind of rally the entire city and then later the Midwest and then later all over the country before really having like a fine-tuned business model. And so there was a lot of exploring that we ended up doing nationally where I think we could have like honed it in sooner and recognized that like helping the founders and their executive teams is like the biggest lever. And if we had just dialed that in sooner and like been like, nope, that's what these other organizations are for. Unfortunately, those didn't exist back then. But, you know, been like, someone else can do that. We're going to do this one thing really well. And that's what we're doing now. We're making it easy for these executives to learn from each other, be able to have those private conversations that don't happen on Twitter or LinkedIn, because, you know, Twitter and LinkedIn are great, you know, if you need to learn how to raise a seed round of funding or find product market fit. But when you get to the scale stage, like those are all people problems, and people problems don't get discussed in public. They get discussed by seasoned entrepreneurs who are in the arena and who have faced those problems and can actually share, hey, this is what I did, and here's how I would suggest doing it based on, or maybe not suggest, but here's what I learned from it. Take it if you want to use it and keep scaling. And so I think that's why we're having the momentum that we have right now is we've learned what we do well. And it's helping those executives and connect those executives to the resources and people that they need to grow and scale. So we still work with investors and we still work with, you know, individual contributors, but more so from a standpoint of like, how do we connect them with the right operators where they can level up their career or deploy their capital?
Yeah, it's funny listening to you talk because there's so many similarities with things we've discussed with Middle Tech and challenges that we've faced at Middle Tech. And yeah, I'm excited that that we got you on the podcast now, and we're gonna be friends from now on because I'm sure there's a lot of advice that you can kind of offer to Middle Tech and where we're trying to get to as a brand and as a community and as a media company. But as we transition towards the end of the episode here, we've introduced this new portion of the podcast. We're trying to create clips that are good for social media. So we're calling it our social media segment here, but it's essentially just high impact questions, 90-second answers around there. And we're going to chop those up and put them on social media, but they also end up in the episode as well. So I'll ask first one, Evan will ask second, I'll ask the third, and then we'll wrap it up here. First question, if you had one piece of advice that you could give an 18-year-old that thinks they'd like to be an entrepreneur, what would it be?
Start a company. I think that there is a huge culture online of people like, I'm thinking about being an entrepreneur, and they like spend years thinking about being an entrepreneur instead of just starting a company. And I empathize with that because I had similar tendencies early on in my life. But my advice to a 18-year-old that thinks they want to be an entrepreneur, start a company, find a problem. Find a market, find a solution to that problem and a way to charge for it, and just start a company. Like, it doesn't have to be the company you run for the rest of your life. Just start a company that makes money. Don't go raise a bunch of money to do it. You don't have to go raise a bunch of money to do it, I guess I should say. And, you know, get going, because, I did go to Kelley School of Business. I think I learned some things with an entrepreneurship and marketing degree. All that stuff I've really like actually learned on the job, doing it, doing CFO work, when we don't have a CFO, doing modeling, when I need to do modeling. And with AI now, I mean, it's never been easier to start something. Build an app on a weekend. Like, you don't have to have any software development skills right now. Like, there's all these low code solutions. If you're young and you're 18, you don't have a bunch of responsibilities, you're not burdened with debt yet, gosh, I'm so excited for you, because you have so much opportunity. And so if you think you want to be an entrepreneur, just try it. Like, start a company. You'll find out quickly whether or not you want to be an entrepreneur. And if you're like, do it for 6 months and you're like, wow, this really sucks, then you're right. It does really suck sometimes. And if it sucks so much that you're going to quit, then quit. You're probably not an entrepreneur. Like, go find an entrepreneur to work for and, be the right-hand person. Like, there's no better way to like start and grow your career than working alongside an entrepreneur as they're growing a high growth business or a slow growth 100%. Business.
All of that is exactly right. I've taken,
yeah, I relate so much of that.
Those steps. That's 100%. And I like to say, I would throw one more thing in there. If you're not going to start a business or work alongside of an entrepreneur in the early stages, I think the third best thing you can do is sales. I always tell people that if you don't have the risk tolerance yet to build a completely new company or join an early stage startup, at least go do sales, because that is the closest thing you can get professionally to actually being an entrepreneur is sales. So I would throw that.
So I have advice in there. I have a secret story that I didn't share earlier, which is when I transferred from Purdue to IU, before I started my company, I did not have time to figure out how I was going to pay for the fact that I lost all of my scholarships. I just had to like make cash fast. And I responded to an ad in the newspaper that I delivered, from the time I was in sixth grade to 12th grade. And it was, learn on the sales training or on the ground training, selling high technology products. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm not applying to anything else. I got, I did the interview on the phone. They said, I'm going to come in and learn the technology. I get in on the first day and they are demonstrating, I was going to see if it was in my room right now, a $2,000 vacuum cleaner. And so I have no other career prospects for the summer. I have to find a way to make $10,000 to pay for school. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'm selling vacuum cleaners door to door in the hottest summer in Indiana history that I've been alive. And it sucked. But to your point, Evan, that skill set of like learning, you're not going to learn sales any faster than like knocking on doors and be like, hey, can I come in your house and demo a 50-pound vacuum cleaner for 4 hours? You're not going to learn any faster. It's like you either sell vacuum cleaners and you make money, or you don't. And I'm sure there's much easier and more 21st century ways to do that today, but that's my crazy sales story.
For sure. That's funny. That just reminds me, my parents had a really nice vacuum cleaner when I was growing up.
Nice. Was it Kirby?
It was one of those. No, I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it's one of those, like, the ones that, like, go through the wall. You just plug it into the wall. It has, like, a vacuum in the garage, and it just
plugs
in any room in your house.
I loved demoing against those vacuum cleaners, by the way.
We can dive into that separately off this podcast. And
it's okay. You don't have to humor me with my vacuum cleaner knowledge.
That was such a fascinating thing about my childhood, was learning how that vacuum worked across the entire house. So that's funny.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
But all right, second question here. Why have you stayed in this region? So what about this region has made you stick around, given, you know, your ambitions to build tech communities and tech startups?
It's fun to be a part of something that's growing. It's nothing is more infectious than momentum. And whether that's working at a company or a sports team, we just had the Super Bowl yesterday, or it's the city that you live in. And I think the Midwest, the Unvalley, Indianapolis has incredible momentum. And it's fun to be a part of that, because other people out there, you know, pushing the car, making stuff happen, there's opportunity to, like, support what they're doing. There's opportunity, lots of blue ocean, right? They talk about a business school term. You know, it's a blue ocean where there's just, like, more and more opportunity. And sure, there's, like, more and more businesses being started. But when you're in a market that's growing, and tech is a market that's growing, the Midwest and the Unvalley is a market that's growing just all around the country. It's fun to be a part of that momentum. And that's what's kept me here. But then I'll also say the community. I think the people here are incredible. You know, some of those early founders that I put on stage are my best friends. You know, my friend Jeb was, like, the one friend at our wedding who, like, married us when my wife and I had our pandemic wedding, and had to go, you know, do a pandemic wedding. And, you know, I met him through the Powder Keg community. We play in a band together with Max Yoder from Lessonly and Santiago from Amplify. And, you know, that's my surfing, right? Because we don't have waves here. So we got to find music waves that we can surf and ride when we're not, you know, doing that in the startup and tech space. So I think it's the people and the community, but it's also, like, the momentum. It's just really, really infectious.
Would be the same answer for me. Exact same answer. All right, last one here. What is your most contrarian take about building a business?
I think my most contrarian take is a little bit contrarian to the Midwest values, which are very much in my DNA, which is hardworking, you know, very people-centric, you know, people-pleasing at times. But the contrarian take is, I think, to be the most effective version of an entrepreneur or the CEO of you, even if you're not the CEO of your company, is slowing down and literally creating space where you are stopped and standing or sitting still in your day. So one of our core values at Powder Keg is practice mindfulness. And it's because I have learned in my own journeys in entrepreneurship that when you can practice mindfulness, and it is a practice, it's not like some place, at least in my experience, that you, like, get there and it's like, oh, I just got to stay here. It's like literally an everyday practice of trying to create that clear space where you're checking in with yourself, you're connecting with yourself, slowing down, because you can't make, in my experience, you can't make the connections you need to make in the marketplace, across customer segments, you know, connecting ideas, building your network, if you're not connected with yourself. And mindfulness is the best way I have found to really connect with yourself. And I would think that that's maybe a little bit contrarian. I know it's a little bit more popular these days, but I've just got some interesting, my mom's a mental health counselor. My dad is a hypnotist. I feel like I was fortunately kind of like raised in an environment that really helped me create that space that I needed. And I also had very many years of my life where I didn't have a lot of mindfulness practice and I was just going a million miles a minute. And I probably could have saved years of wandering in the desert, so to speak, if I had just like practiced mindfulness for a minute or several minutes a day. Literally 10 minutes a day is all it takes to really see like powerful results. And so slowing down, stopping, and like one of the most powerful things an entrepreneur can do is nothing.
I love that. I think it's becoming less contrarian to your point. I think it's still like, it depends on what, you know, group you listen to. There's still like the hustle culture bros that'll be like, you should be working all the time, blah, blah, blah. But no, I really resonate with that one. I'm big on the mindfulness sort of spirituality sort of stuff as well. So that's a great one. That's a great one. I'm glad you brought that one up.
Scott Jones had a,
yeah.
I was just going to say that, Scott Jones had a quote that was, I don't believe in work-life balance. I believe in work-life integration, which was code for you're going to be working all the time. So it is a tricky balance because I do think that the conversation, at least online, is very like polarizing. It's like either you're hustle culture or you like you've reached enlightenment. And it's like the truth is somewhere in between, which is like sometimes you need to practice mindfulness and do nothing. Sometimes you need to like bust your ass and get stuff done and like pull an all-nighter because you got a demo with a really important client the next day. And like both can be true. Just like it, but if you're connected with yourself, you know when to like rest, you know when to take a break, you know when to like when you're getting out of alignment with your own personal values. And so I think that that's probably a whole other podcast episode that we could do.
Oh, for sure. The answer is always somewhere in the gray area. It's never a binary answer. But to the point of work-life integration, that's something I've said for a long time. I think it's something that's unique to like startups. You're not going to want to integrate your work and your life if you're working at like a big corporate company. I wouldn't think. I really wouldn't know. I've never worked at one, but I've said that for a long time. Like Evan and I's relationship is a good example of that. We have friends that are all building companies that we like traveling around together and, you know, kind of doing it while we're experiencing visiting places like Costa Rica. And, you know, it's a very life-giving thing when you can figure out the right way to integrate it. So I'm a big fan of that as well. But Matt, man,
you guys should come up for one of our executive summits up here, man. Yeah, sorry, dude, I keep interrupting you, but gotta get you guys up to Indy for our executive summit.
For sure. No, I think there's a little delay, so it's all good. Well, yeah, I know that you told us about the AI executive summit. So why don't you take a second to tell us about that event coming up and then wherever people can find out more about Powder Keg, where they can follow you on social, all of that sort of stuff. Let's do the plug segment of the podcast here.
Cool. Right on. So our executive community is a pretty exciting community. Some of my favorite people are in that community and I'm meeting new people every day because our community is growing. We have an online platform, allows people to have these really unique guides for navigating the tech industry, getting connected to Silicon Valley, beyond Silicon Valley, and everywhere in between, to the resources they need to grow and scale. But one of the things that's really unique about what we do is we have core groups that meet either monthly or quarterly with your kind of like core 8 to 10 people that are at a similar stage, maybe a little bit ahead, maybe a little bit behind in their career trajectory. But then we also do these quarterly summits. And we've got one here coming up on March 5th for our executive members. Probably be around 250, 300 people. Good portion founders, a lot of executives and investors. But the topic is AI. And so Authentix, that company I mentioned earlier, they're going to be pitching. Go Charlie from up in Chicago is coming down to pitch their AI, generative AI marketing platform. That's very, very cool. And we've got Christopher Day from Elevate Ventures, one of the top 5 most active VCs in the country, and is, of course, Elevate Ventures is Indiana's focused fund. Very, very active, investing in lots of companies. He's going to be kind of giving a little update of state of AI, some of the exciting things coming up with the big rally conference. And then relevant to what we were just talking about, there's literally 2 hours of mindset training and coaching for our executive members. So if you're interested in getting some of those skills that like professional sports athletes use, come a little bit early before the pitch night in the happy hour, and you'll actually get some of these really, really interesting coaching and training to kind of bring your best self to your work every single day and into the team and to your family as well.
I love it. Well, real quick, tell everyone where they can find Powder Keg online or on socials, and then we'll let you go.
Sure. Powder Keg, all one word, powderkeg.com. That's our website. Our weekly newsletter is the Unvalley 3 on Thursday. We kind of break down three different trends that we're seeing in the Unvalley, three different companies, and three other big guides and resources every single week. I write that with my team, but also with the community. So we've got the whole support of the community putting that newsletter together. Easy, free way to kind of get plugged into some of the biggest opportunities in the Unvalley. And on social, where's Powder Keg or Powder Keg HQ? Some of the platforms, I think we weren't able to get at Powder Keg, but at Powder Keg on Facebook, Instagram, Powder Keg HQ, I think on X is what it's called now. lots of, if you just Google Powder Keg, you'll find us.
Awesome. Well, Matt, it's been awesome chatting with you, getting to know you a little bit. And I know Evan's going to be up there for the AI Executive Summit. I'm hoping I can make it as well so awesome. We can chat in person.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, it's been a great episode, man. We'll be looking forward to talking again soon.
Yeah, me too. Thanks for the time.